Well, hello and welcome to PHP Alive and Kicking. The astute of you may notice I am not Mike, I'm Chris. Mike is very inconveniently on holiday and decided to leave me to it this week, so you've got me and a guest. Before we bring on our guest, though, if you're watching us, we are live, so feel free to come and join us in Discord at discord.phparch.com, where you can chat with us live, and not just for the shows. That applies at any time you want to chat with us. There's always somebody around. We also live over on YouTube, so if you're watching us elsewhere, feel free to join us on YouTube. That's youtube.com/phparch. We also have a conference coming up in 2027. That's the PHP Tech Conference. The call for papers is now open, and we have had some submissions already. So go and check it out, get some early bird tickets, and come and join what I think is one of the best conferences in the world. And we also publish a monthly magazine. Yes, it is actually a printed magazine or digital. And we've got a discount code for you. If you use the discount code ALIVE3, then that will get you the first 3 months of a digital subscription that's annual for free. And the other thing that we have a swag store. For those of you that have been watching a while, no, I still haven't bought that t-shirt, but I will one day. And you'll find that at store.phparch.com. So today we do have a guest with us, and it's somebody that many of you will already know, and that is Derek Rethens. Hey, Derek. I'm hoping Derek's with us.
Yes, I am. Hello.
Hello. How are you doing?
I'm all right. It's finally cooled down. We had 70 drops of rain today, so that's 70 drops more than in the last 40 days.
Yeah, I mean, the UK has basically had no rain at all for a month.
Yeah, in the south, yeah. It's been terrible.
So you say it's cooling down, but I'm a bit further north than you in the Midlands, and it seems to be getting hotter, which is interesting at this time of night. I mean, it's, 8 o'clock here, and it shouldn't be getting hotter at 8 o'clock at night, so I'm sort of hoping that this brings a storm with it, but we'll see.
Chatting into weather talk. I mean, it's what you get when you got two British people talking, right? It's always weather.
You start with the weather, and then you'll always say that you're going to meet up at some point, and that never happens. That's just British conversation.
Fair enough.
So, Derek, you've probably seen a few of our episodes before. We always start with the same question to anybody new to the podcast. How did you get into PHP?
Yeah, that's a long time ago. Is it last century? Maybe just or maybe just not. Started using it as a user. I was in university. We were doing some websites for people, and we wanted some database connectivity. And there was, we could use ASP.NET, but we did not pay for it. And Linux was kind of cool. And then PHP was quite easy to start using. So yeah, that's basically how I started using it. And then very soon after that, because everybody was being cool and wanted to use Shockwave Flash films on their website. And we did want to do that too. But what we wanted to have it centered in the middle of the screen. And this is way before CSS was even existing, right? So in order to do that, what you needed to know is the width of images. Now, PHP had a function for that, right? Get image size, still there, still works. But it didn't understand shockwave flash films. So I'll do support for that. That was my first accepted contribution to PHP.
Nice. So even back at the very early days, you were contributing to PHP.
Yes. Actually, back then, Chris and I have been talking on and off offline in the last week or so about bug triage mostly. That's what I ended up doing quite a lot in the first few years I was contributing to PHP. Going through the issue tracker, looking at all the bugs that were there, trying to reproduce them and attempt to fix them at some point as well. And for a long, long time, like several years, there were basically, it was me and Jani Tuskin, who's probably none of you have ever heard of. You sometimes see the name Sniper in your commit log still somewhere. I did it for a few years and we were the main people doing that. Of course, that has changed now. Now lots of more people are doing it, but important task, but it also gets very easily neglected, and that's how you end up with backlogs of 1,000 issues and 1,000 pull requests and things like that, right?
Yeah, and bug tracking on an open source thing, especially a language, you're going to attract reports, and it's triaging those and looking for the ones that are either A, bad code from a user point of view, or B, just frivolous reports like, I really want this feature. Well, that's not a bug, that's a feature request, and it's almost like we have a process for that.
Yeah, but I mean, it's always been a thing that feature requests also end up in issue trackers, right? There should not be anything wrong with that.
Yeah, and it's just triaging those and pointing people to the right place. Yep. And that's one of the things that I'm in the process of picking up on is triaging for the language and making sure that we're getting back on top of the backlog. That last time I looked, there was over 900 issues, which is a lot of issues. So let's get that down to a manageable number.
I mean, even if you look at the daytime ones that I looked through, well, once a month, I should do a bit more of them, but at the moment, about once every month. But some of these issues, because date algorithms are very complicated, right? So even if you see a script where people use daytime stuff, it still takes a lot of time to figure out whether it's actually what they're doing is what's causing the issues, or there's actually a bug in PHP. Especially with complicated things where people haven't always simplified their reports, it's actually not a simple thing to do, and it takes a long, long time. Where things that crash is often easy to repeat.
Yeah.
Because you have a script that crashes, that's easy.
Yeah. And
because it's student.
I mean, with daytime, if only we had this universal time standard that we could use.
I mean, that's not the only thing, right? I mean, there's the daytime format that most people use, in at least in programming ways. But it is, if I add a month to something, what does that even mean as a concept, right?
Yeah.
So what is a month? If it's currently, say, January 31st and we add a month, what does that mean? Where do you end up, right? I mean, PHP always has just increased the month number by one. So you get February 31st, and that then overflows to March 2nd or 3rd, depending on the year. But often when people want to add a month to a day that they already have, they don't care about the days in a month, right? They just want to see the next month. So you then need to consider that like the concept of a next month is distinct from adding a month to a date.
Yes.
And that's in PHP it's all doable, but it's not the easiest. So we actually have been looking at, I've been brainstorming about better interfaces so people can't make those mistakes. But that's a lot of work.
Yeah, it's finding an interface that is usable for everybody. I mean, something like Carbon, for example, exists for a reason. It's a unified interface that people understand. But taking Carbon and making it the standard in the language isn't necessarily the right way to go. And in my opinion, it actually isn't. But at a language level, you need something that works for everybody and ideally doesn't break everything that already exists.
Well, yeah, there's that too. I mean, for PHP 8.6, we're actually getting the first new date time class or time class. We're putting it in the time namespace, I suppose. Duration. Which represents a duration in seconds and nanoseconds with a specific range.
Nice.
So that's the first thing that we're actually adding. It is sort of a trial out for new APIs, but beyond that, it's also useful for the Streams API, where we need to have a sleep kind of thing. And being able to use a duration for a sleep call in many different ways is a useful start for it. So, but it's also a smaller thing to do.
Yeah. So, calling sleep with a duration class that you can then calculate rather than an integer.
Yeah, but not a bit of class for an object, but yes, that's what you meant.
I know. Yeah. So Joe is suggesting that we need to remain on the British tack. So the next question is biscuits. What's your favorite biscuit?
Oh, ginger nuts.
Absolutely.
British biscuits, I would say ginger nuts. If we extend this to biscuits, then I think my favorite treat are still the Dutch stroopwafels. But they're they're more of an autumn and winter thing.
Yes, absolutely. I buy them every time I see them, but they have to be real ones and not the cheap imitations.
Yeah, I mean, I have the luck going to the Netherlands four times a year, so there's always space in my luggage to bring some home. Yes.
In which case, I'm going to add to your next order.
I mean, you can just order them.
Yeah. Joe's agreeing with you.
I see, yeah.
Yeah. So, duration is one thing that's getting added. What else is coming in 8.6?
Lots of, like, little improvements and stuff. I think probably one of the bigger things might be partial function applications. So, you know that in 8.5, we got, like, what's the name of this called? The pipe operator, for example, right? And anything, if you want to do pipe something in something that accepts more than one argument, you need to wrap that in a closure. And wrap that in extra parentheses because how the PHP parser works. So with 8.6, we're getting partials, which allows you to basically, from a function or from a closure that you have, pre-fill in some of the arguments and then wrap that up. So that means that in the pipe operator, you can then put a partial in. The partial accepts only the one argument, so you don't have to wrap it in a separate closure anymore. So that is probably one of the bigger ones that I see as being useful. Now, are there others? Yes. Do I remember them? No, but we can have a look.
That sounds like a good idea.
My memory is terrible. So.
I mean, I only remembered we got 8.6 the other day because Joe said that the beta was coming out.
yeah. Next coming week. So then what are we getting? Joe, what are we getting? We got, what is important? Interesting things. Oh yeah, the polling API is probably an interesting one. That's what I meant when I say using streams, sort of duration object. If you do polling, then you need timeouts. And having the duration there instead of integers is a good way of doing it. So that is probably a good one. What else is interesting? Interesting. There's actually not that much interesting thing in PHP 8.6. I think the other big work thing was TLS session resumption support for streams. Now, that's a mouthful. But basically what that means, if you would create a TLS connection with a socket, then every time you do that in each request or multiple times, whatever you want to do it, then not only need to create a TLS connection, but you also need to do extra work setting up a session in TLS. And there's the things like OpenSSL have a way of shortcutting that to make your TLS connection go faster. So that's something that's new. And lots of work is being done for PHP streams, but I don't think we'll see that in PHP 8.6. It's going to be in the next one. There's some work being done by Jakub Zelenka from the PHP Foundation to improve the streams layer. And there's a lot of things to do in the streams layer because it's kind of old code.
Yeah, and it's one of those that at the moment I think is quite underused, really. The streams layer, there's not many that really understand it. It's one of those a bit like the JIT where it's a fantastic tool once you get your head around what it's doing for you and you use it in the right way.
But the JIT you can just enable, right? You can just turn it on and it will work. Whereas the streams layer, actually, what it allows you to do is a lot more than just file get contents or opening a file and reading from, right? There's a lot more things you can actually do with it, like the way how it works is like each stream layer get like a bucket of data that you can transform and stuff with it. Like there's a lot of things in there that you can actually do. But it isn't as convenient as what I think that Go IOS layer does, where you can have different readers and writers. I think that is a much nicer approach because that means you can just substitute one stream type like HTTP or FTP. And use it interchangeably with a file stream or an S3 stream or whatever thing you come up with. And I would hope we see some progress in that, but it's a lot of hard work and it takes a long time to do that.
It's embedded in so many places in the standard that it is now that it's unpicking that and making it safe to replace with the new version.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I think it is so much work that it can't be done in one cycle, which then makes it really hard to start going, because how do you work on a project that you need to keep in sync with master, with our master branch for a year and a half, right? That's a pain in the proverbial backside. Yeah.
Yes, definitely. I've been on projects like that. I mean, not quite as in depth as a PHP language, but I've been on projects where it's, you know, 6-12 months of work that needs to go into a feature.
Yeah.
And then master's been moving on and it's like, oh yeah, the feature has now fallen behind master. Let's make the merge. Oh look, that's fun. Where did all of those files I was just changing go?
Yeah, I mean, it's something we're going to run into with the PHP website itself, where everything is in one directory, right? So there's nothing like libraries on the site. Everything is basically in the public www directory, except that we don't have the directory, so everything is in a root, which is not nice. So we're wanting to have a look at, well, there's a patch for doing that, and I think it is sort of ready to emerge, but since it got made, it's been 5 or 6 weeks. So I'm already not looking forward to the merge conflicts on that one, but it's something we'll have to do pretty soon, because we have some plans on working on the website itself to make it more marketing-y. Actually, there's, if you haven't heard of it, the PHP Foundation has this ambassadors program where we have three streams. We have, what's it called? It's speaking, marketing, and research. So the research stream is mostly used for how do we figure out how people use PHP, who uses it, and yeah, what are people missing sort of ish. The speakers thing is how to promote PHP at conferences and meetups. And then a marketing one is, well, the marketing one where one of the things would be the website, for example. So yeah, I think that's a good way. That just got started though, so I haven't gotten very far with that, but I can see much more progress happening that in the near future.
Yeah, and I'm actually part of the marketing group. I'm, to be fair, I'm pretty much part of all of them. But the marketing group is the one that I went to, and it's one of those where the work that's going to go into this and the process that's being put in place means that after we've done the hard work in the first place, it should then be easier to continue that work going forward.
Yeah. Yeah, and sort of the first thing is that to clean up the code base a little bit, because it is literally 1999's code.
Yeah, and
some cases.
I can believe that. And sometimes for areas true, like the docs, it doesn't need to change so much as...
Yeah, docs has changed a lot in the last 30 years as well, right? I mean, it's still written in docbook XML, which I think is a good choice still. But the way how it is rendered to the website is very, very different than it used to be. I remember writing stylesheet in some kind of Lisp kind of language, and it literally took like 7 hours to even build one language, for example. But it now takes about 7 minutes or something like that. But even documentation is a hard thing to do, right? Because there's in a documentation on php.net, we have documentation that is, well, from built-in extensions like XStandard or Daytime or the MySQL extension and stuff like that. But there's also third-party extensions are also documented in there. Third-party extensions, meaning extensions that don't live in a PHP source directory. And there's now a process just started to move some of these out of the main documentation towards something that lives still in our manual, but as a third-party sort of repository of documentation, to make it clear that it isn't things that are support.
Sorry, I caught the microphone.
To make sure that it is more obvious of what is something that is supported by directly by the project and what is done by third-party languages and, third-party developers of extensions. And it wouldn't surprise me if we end up moving to a way where we don't host those in a repository in the php.net organization anymore, but have a way of pulling them in from what extension creators have done themselves documentation-wise. But that's a project for the future. I don't know what it's going to end up.
Yeah, and I think it's one of those where it is going to take time to decide how to do that and other things, but yeah, it's one that makes it clearer what is actually PHP and what is somebody else's code that works with PHP.
Right, and this is something that we want to focus marketing-wise a little bit on as well, right, where at the moment it's very techie, the PHP.NET homepage, for example. We don't really talk about who uses it or what are the cool new features or what are its strengths and how to set it to your CIO, CIO, CTO, whoever, one of those, and things like that. So we want to work on that. And with that, I think it is also useful to have a documentation on a slightly better way, I suppose, as well. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. So at that point, I think it's probably a good time to hear from one of our partners.
I'll be back.
Thank you to our partners over at Displaced Technologies. Building PHP applications is your passion. Managing cloud infrastructure shouldn't be your headache. Displaced is your partner in cloud infrastructure orchestration, giving solo developers and small teams the tools and automation to deploy enterprise-grade Kubernetes clusters without the enterprise-grade complexity or cost. Their CLI tool streamlines everything from local development to fully managed cloud deployments on AWS, Azure, Google Cloud Platform, and more. Skip the steep learning curve of Docker, Kubernetes, and Terraform. Let their automation free you to focus on your core business without losing control of your infrastructure. Get started at displace.tech. That's displace.tech. And discover how the right tools can eliminate the need for a full DevOps team.
Thank you, Displace. For once, I actually remembered to say that part, because Mike always says that part.
I'm back.
So, returning to the three English things, we now need to talk about queuing. So, what's your favorite queue type?
The one that has only one person in it?
That's the right answer.
Okay, but I do want to talk about queuing as a side tangent. You know that if you go to a post office, you queue in a queue, right? You do that. What do you do if you go to a bar or a pub?
Well, you sort of mingle around the bar until somebody serves you.
Yes, and the bar staff is usually very good at keeping order. What has been happening now here, especially since the pandemic, people don't know how pubs work anymore. So they start queuing in a queue. It's like, there's like five bar staff, and like, how does that work? It's like, people don't know what they're doing anymore. And then they get upset if you just go to the bar like you're supposed to do in the pub. Anyway, slight rant.
But that has always been the case of going to the bar and waiting. And
yeah.
I know that the pandemic meant that we had to give distance and all the rest of it.
No, but it isn't that. It's like, it's just.
Yeah. I don't understand the change. And so I've noticed weird. It myself. I mean, one of the local pubs does that accidentally, just by the way that the pub's arranged, and sure. People naturally form a queue. But then there's another one where it's Wetherspoons, and you're watching people queue in Wetherspoons.
I never see people queue in Wetherspoons because I don't go to Wetherspoons. But
I mean, yeah, I tried not to, but. Yeah. So, Derek, I know that you developed one of the coolest parts of the PHP language. Well, not necessarily the language, but an extension, which I use all the time, XDebug.
I've heard of it, yeah.
You have? Good. Yeah. So, I use it all the time. It's significantly better than just doing DD everywhere and vardump everywhere. And so I know that you try to keep in sync with PHP releases and keeping things up to date there. So what's coming up in XDebug for 8.6?
Well, there's at the moment nothing very specific that I've merged in. But for the previous one that was released with PHP 8.5, I worked on native path mapping. So instead of setting up your path mappings, which is something you need to do if your PHP code runs in a different environment than your local machine. For example, if it runs in a Docker container or a development machine or something like that, you need to set up the mapping between the remote and the local paths, right? Now, with the native path mapping, you can make these configurations in XDebug, so you don't have to make them in your IDE anymore. So that is going to have some extra features that make it a lot more usable. Since it was released, a few people started trying it out, and I find like this quality of life kind of things that should be improved to do that. So that's one thing. The other one is PHP 8.6 support. And luckily, unless some previous PHP releases, there's not so much that is currently broken, except for that we changed something in PHP itself, where PHP thinks that code, on which lines code is happening, and something got broken there. So we're trying to figure out how to unbreak that to make sure that when you do your step debugging, that it actually stops on the right lines. So we're untangling that at the moment. And then the other big thing that I want to work, or I've worked on, is I have a new implementation of code coverage, which gives much better, gives better results, but unfortunately it's also a little bit slower. So I haven't merged that yet, but I think I will regardless, because I prefer correct output over quick output.
Yeah, and I suppose it depends on just how big of a difference it is. I mean, if you're talking a few milliseconds over an app, I don't think anybody will even care.
Well, code coverage is never a few milliseconds.
Fair.
Yeah. But, I mean, you expect it, your application to run sometimes 10, sometimes 20 times slower, depending how your application is done right. And this adds another 10% to it. So it's not a terrible thing. But it also, I really want to improve on. But it is kind of a complicated thing to do. And it's a lot of work. And a lot of time.
Yeah. And, I mean, 10% for better results kind of feels like a good payoff to me. But
yeah,
we know what people are like.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, this is the complaint that I get about code coverage in XDebug, right? That has become so slow. Yeah, it's true.
Yeah, but have they tried code coverage in other languages? Because it isn't much better.
No, I wouldn't have thought so. No. I don't know. I mean, I know that PHP covers quicker, but it also doesn't do a lot of things. It doesn't do any branch coverage or path coverage and things like that, right? It doesn't do that code analysis. It's lightweight, but it also doesn't provide all the necessary useful results there.
Yeah, I guess it's one of those where if you need the extra information that XDebug provides, it's worth paying the cost of runtime.
I mean, isn't something you probably run every time you run your tests, right? But every time you have a big PR, then you run it with code coverage and CI. That's what I do. Would do.
Yeah. And it code coverage as well isn't necessarily a good metric for whether it's right or wrong.
No.
But it's a metric that helps you to make that decision.
Yeah. So that is line coverage mostly. If you look at path and branch coverage, that can teach you a lot more. It basically tells you that even though you might have covered every line with tests, you haven't covered every path through each method, right? Now, is this something you want to do for everything? Probably not, because that makes every time you have a branching point in a function or a method, it means you need to write two times as many tests, right? Every time it doubles, every time there's a branching point.
Yeah, so, and
that's a lot of tests.
Yeah, it don't half get away with you quick, doesn't it? Because, you know, by the time you've got to four branches, well, that's now not just 8 tests. You're actually at 16 tests.
You're at 16, yeah.
And then the next one's 32, 64, yeah. And it soon mounts up.
Yeah, and soon XDebug gives up. Because if you have that many branches, then you just run out of memory, right? So XDebug has a hard limit. I don't know what it is. I think it is 64K or so. Yeah, probably that would make sense. 2 to the 16th is probably what it is. I mean, there's no reason that XDebug does that, but it's basically to make sure you don't just run out of memory.
Yeah, and again, it's almost a hint to, if you've got that many branches in a single place, perhaps you need to rewrite that place.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, luckily the time where people write 2009 methods is over, but there's probably quite a lot of legacy code out there.
You'd think that, but I have seen, not from here, but I have seen very recent pull requests from people wanting to make a 2000 line function. No, this is 20 functions. Here's where you split it.
Yes. Yeah, that happens. So yeah, that is going on. And what else I have with XDebug is, I talking about cloud from your partner, there's also something called XDebug Cloud, which is a way of allowing debugging where networking otherwise wouldn't allow it. This happens if, say, for example, a remote team working from home needs to share a development machine, which happens a fair amount, then there's no way how you can have multiple people debug at the same time. Because although you can make an SSH tunnel towards the development machine, only one person can do it at the same time because you can't share the port to listen to. So Xdebug Cloud is something that helps with that. And I've been running that for a while. And I've spent a little bit more time on recently to make it a bit easier, to make the billing a bit better. That's easier for my accountant, but still important to do. And I've not been very vocal about this whatsoever. So my plan for the rest of the year is to do a bit more marketing about it as well, to get it out to people.
Yeah, and it's one that I've sort of looked at briefly, and it's not an area that I need because it's not a function that I need on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah. But
the principle of it, I know teams where when they're trying to tell me, well, we were trying to debug this and there's three of us trying together and we're all sharing this server to debug it. Yeah, well, this server's over here.
Yeah. So yeah, I want to talk more about that and show that off a bit more.
Yeah.
I mean, because I have to run this, it's not for free, right? It's a paid service. But it also helped me dedicate more time to Xdebug to improve Xdebug for everyone. So,
yeah, and I don't have the figures offhand, but I remember it being what I considered for the service to be pretty cheap in the first place.
It's similar to what private packages is and Tideways, because that's what I looked at when doing that, yeah.
I just couldn't remember the figure offhand, but I remember it not being expensive.
I can't either.
This sounds like one of the links that Joe needs to find for us, Joe.
I can type it myself. It's not a hard link.
I could have guessed that.
Yeah, I know.
It is £15 annually for £15 monthly for an individual. Yeah. Or 150 annually. Yeah, I was right. It's very, very competitive.
It doesn't cost a lot of resources. It's always some time to help people get going. Well, actually, not really, because most people figure it out themselves because it's not hard. Instead of setting an IDE key that most of people do already anyway in their configuration, you need to set a key that is your cloud key, and that's it. Almost. Also, yeah. the native path mapping helps with this as well. That's not the reason why I added it, but it does help.
Yeah. And so one of the other areas I wanted to ask you about was deprecations in 8.6. This seems to have become quite a hot topic of conversation and some interesting conversations ensuing from the deprecations. Where do you think we are with the RFC and with the process for that?
I think sometimes the push to deprecate things quickly is not always useful because there's a few deprecations on our list. So to explain, every year there is a big list of deprecations for PHP 8 point whatever version it is, where all of these possibilities are collected and then we vote on these separately. It's a big list. I don't know how many there are in here this time. Where is it? Too many things.
Joe's just linked it in Discord.
That's all right. I mean, there's maybe 20, 25 things in there. And some of these make sense to me. Many others do not. I don't see the reason why, what the benefit is to users, so to speak. So I'm more reluctant approving deprecations than others. As an example here, something that, in my opinion, does nothing to help anybody is deprecating the metaphone function. Now, hopefully not many of you have probably heard of it or used it, but that's fine because it also doesn't hurt it being there. It's just a function with an implementation that basically converts English words to a sequence of digits that represent the word itself, for example. And things like that, like, why deprecate it? It doesn't hurt anybody, right?
I actually use that in some live code.
Yeah, and I'm sure some people do.
Yeah.
And what is the result? Is that, well, you can't use it anymore.
And what's the first thing I'm going to do? Replace that with a private function of my own.
Yeah, so there's actually, this is one of the fun things sometimes, right? Because there is a Composer package for it, but that uses the internal function.
What?
So although in the deprecation list, it said, oh yeah, you can install this Composer package to replace it with, but you can't because it uses the internal function, which is kind of funny. So yes, and this is sometimes another thing. I don't think always there's enough time spent on actually looking at what impacts to benefit ratio there is. Like there's another one, like the deprecated dechunk filter. So dechunk is something you use if you have an HTTP 1.1 connection, there's chunked encoding in there. And chunked encoding is basically a way of sending your HTTP data in chunks. And that's a very simple protocol. And there's a function for that, so you can run that. Or you can use it in the filter and stuff like that. And so that's on the deprecation list. Okay, that doesn't seem to pass at the moment, which is, in my opinion, a good thing, because this function, although it is exposed to user land, is also internally used by our HTTP streams. So even though you can deprecate a function, you actually don't end up removing any functionality because you need to keep it anyway because of the internal things and things like that. So yeah, I am more reluctant saying yes to deprecations than quite a few others, I would say.
Yeah, there's one on there that I really don't like the idea of deprecating, mainly because I use it. List.
Yeah, so currently you can use list, it's not a function, it's a keyword, to deconstruct an array or something like that. You can use list parentheses open, argument, comma, argument, comma, argument. And then if you do equals and then an array, it will pull out the array elements from there to fill up the list. What you can do for quite some time is using the square bracket syntax instead of the word list. That's the same thing. I think it doesn't look as obvious of what you're actually trying to do. But now there's a deprecation here for deprecating lists.
At the moment, I think yes and no are equal on that one. 21-21 and one abstain.
Yeah, so if it's 21-21, you need to remember that the yes needs to be twice as high as the no. So this is not going to happen now. But others are closer. And yeah, I mean, that's how it is. Like deprecate returning from a finally block. Yeah. Does it make sense? No. Do people use it? Yes. Does it hurt anything? No, not really.
I didn't even know you could.
Yeah, but it also doesn't, I mean, removing functionality also doesn't then suddenly allow for other things to be implemented. So I don't think this is useful.
Yeah, removing for the sake of removing. And is it something that needs continuous maintenance? By the sound of that one and my rough knowledge of the PHP language source, no. Occasionally you might need to fiddle with something, but why remove it if you don't need to?
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, that's my opinion about the deprecations. Don't have to add much more to that.
No, it's interesting, though, that people, even within the team, have such different opinions. And I actually think that's a good thing.
Yeah.
Because you get, I hate the choice of phrase, but can't think of a better one. You get a broad church of people's opinions that then feed one consensus at the end of it. And by having the two-thirds majority, that as well means that it needs to be something where an agreement has been reached by most of the people.
Well, what the voting used to be all about wasn't about voting, it was to confirm the consensus that was being reached on the list. That's what the voting was for. So if a vote is really close, that sort of tells, well, originally the voting was 50-50, right? So you need to have 50% plus one of the vote to get something to pass. That is not consensus. Consensus should be where you have 75 or more, we settled on two-thirds, but 75 or 80% is for something to do. And not just 50-50. So is two-thirds good enough? I don't know. It's probably the best we can do for now.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly closer. The perfection would be 100%, but that's never going to happen.
Yeah, but you can never reach that anyway. So
no,
that's the point. Then nothing will happen.
Yeah, I've been in organizations where 100% consensus must be reached. What are we having for lunch? We didn't eat for 3 days whilst we decided.
Yeah.
So Joe makes a good point that a number of the deprecations are in preparation for future RFCs to use the keywords from reserved words, which, if we're not using them, seems like a good idea. I mean, yeah, I can understand that. And I think the question is, how do we define who's using them? Do we actually have any way of getting that metric?
Yes, there are a few people that run, that scan, say, the top 1,000 project, PHP projects on GitHub to see whether syntax is being used. So some of that work is being done. But this is always something that almost instantaneously comes up after the list of deprecations announced. Like, did you even bother looking at the impact on the ecosystem? And a lot of the time, well, sometimes it's said like, well, there's no need for this because, I don't know, for whatever reason, I don't like that. I think you need to have a very good reason for removing something. Otherwise, you shouldn't do it.
I mean, if you take the concept of the top 1,000, I mean, let's just say Symfony. And let's say that Symfony is one of the top 1,000. And you look at that, not only do you need to look at that, you need to look at the composer packages that they call and the composer packages that the composer packages call. Then how far down that chain do you go before you say it's fine?
Luckily, not as far as Node.js.
Fair. Node has a package for everything, including telling you if you've got packages.
Yes. I don't know. I'm not used to it, so.
Yeah, there is literally a package you can install in Node. The only thing it does is reads the package.json, forgotten the name of it, but the package list to tell you if you've got a package installed. Well, just read the JSON yourself.
but nobody wants to read JSON.
I mean, fair, but surely if you've got to the point that you're programming, you can read JSON. Is that not like 101?
I mean, I'm sure there's a reason why you sometimes programmatically want to look at these things, but in most cases, I don't think that's... In any case, this is a side tangent.
Yeah, this is the entirety of this podcast, just finding side tangents.
Fine.
So... one of the other things that's going on at the moment is the PHP infrastructure and changes around that. What's going on there? I have no idea.
No. So what happened in the last year or so, the last year and a half, is that back in the olden times, everybody set up their own stuff with their own hardware, their own software, their own sponsored servers and stuff like that. And over the years, all these people have, not all of them, most of them have just moved away or disappeared or had other better things to do. So nobody's really maintaining it. It was really hard to do because of the such diversity in operating systems. I mean, there was still one running FreeBSD 4.3. So over the last year and a half, or the first year of the last year and a half, mostly me, have been converting that to an Ansible-based infrastructure repository to maintain all these services, so everything is now the same. We have some help with that. Joe, for example, is helping me out with that. And yeah, just having this maintained in a separate project is much better. And at the same time, we've also moved over to a different, CDN, Content Delivery Network, because we sort of outgrew the old one. It's not that we're no longer using it. We still do for a few things, and that provider also still helps us out with the email service and a bunch of other things. But we sort of outgrew that, so we moved over to a different CDN, which is causing some interesting issues. Like, there, by default, there, if you don't set cache rules yourself, it caches it for a month, which is a bit long.
That sounds like a bad idea.
Yeah. And similarly, by default, it doesn't take the query string into account as your cache key.
What?
Which is also annoying because we use that a lot on all of our stuff.
Why would you not take the query string into account?
Yeah, I mean, it's luckily a flag to turning it on, but there's a whole bunch of these things that we need to relearn because we didn't know that was there. And it also means that, we need to now basically go through the PHP or all the code bases that run all the PHP at the something.php.net services to make sure we do the caching right and cache invalidation and things like that. Where running on our old CDN, although we ran everything to it, we never really relied much on the caching aspect of it. But that's become more and more necessary because of all those AI scraping bots that like tearing down our machines.
Yeah. So
yeah, you can ask a question.
Joe wants to know, did they sort out the dark and light modes being shared across users in an organization? So
this is kind of funny. It's like when I was onboarding Joe, he toggled from light mode to dark mode. And I log in the next day and said, why is this all in dark mode? So I changed it back. And then Joe says, it's back in light mode. So I made that change. So yes, apparently this is not a user setting. This is an organization setting. And no, they haven't figured it out and not solved that problem yet. But I've been assured that they're looking at it, at least. Because it was a surprise. So, yes. Not an important one, but it was a surprise.
But I don't even know how they got to the point that that's an organization setting.
Yeah.
Is that not like literally the most basic user setting?
That's what I figured.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he says zero impact on the CDN, but I love it.
Yeah. It's one of these quirks. Yeah, and then the other big thing is like, if there's no cache rules, we cache it for a month.
Yeah. That seems significant. I mean,
yeah, and for lots of our stuff, that's fine, right? Like most of the manual data is absolutely fine. For all of our downloads, it's fine. For the download files themselves, but what it isn't good for is the downloads page or the front page, the pages where we have our pre-releases on. So yeah, we had to figure that out, and I know Joe has been working on some cache invalidation as well. But we'll probably have to improve on that to make sure that we don't actually have to purge caches when changes are happening and stuff like that. So,
yeah.
Because it's sometimes okay to be a little still. Like the page where we have our new releases, if that's 15 minutes out of date, that's fine. I mean, it's not great, but it's okay. If it's an hour, it's annoying because the release managers, when they upload things, they need to wait before it shows up. And you can't tell from just going to the page because there's so many CDN nodes and they all cache it themselves, right, with different time frames. So you always have to wait the full cache time after you make a change so that you know that it's updated on all the CDN nodes. So yeah, there's a few like, yeah, what do you call that, learning moments there. But that's all.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's interesting how just one simple, but you know what I mean, simple change of a CDN gives you so many moments where you can go, huh, that's interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So one of the other areas that's getting talked about quite a lot around the community at the moment is the next generation of PHP developers, PHP caretakers.
Yeah.
So how do we as a community, us individually, help the next generation to A, want to contribute, and B, actually contribute?
That's a great question. You were hoping that I have an answer for you, but unfortunately I don't really have that myself. What I do know is that the PHP Foundation has that as a specific goal to do. And I've already mentioned this ambassadors program before, with the deep three different streams. And one of these things is, does it follow marketing? I don't know, but almost all of these three streams are there to make it, to make PHP show more active, show that it is still used a lot. So to draw attention to it, that it is something good to work on, because it is a thriving project with a long way to go. It's now 31 years old, I believe. 32, I don't know. I lost track of that. 31, I believe. And that's not a long time. I mean, if you look at languages like C, bad example. But that's, 60 years now? I don't know.
Yeah. It's easily 60, if not more.
Yeah, it's from the late 60s, so yeah, you can think of that. So yeah, I mean, those are the things to work on. And it's not a simple thing to do. What it is useful is that people that use it as a language, you need to somehow make it obvious to them that improving the language that they use day to day in their jobs is also doable, and it doesn't require that much effort to actually engage with a bit of project. I mean, we try to be as open as we can with different places where you can talk to us. We have a mailing list, which is a bit formal, but we also have the PHP Foundation has Discord channels, or the PHPC community has Discord channels where we're getting more active of people talking and asking questions about internals and how to contribute, and discussions about features that might or might not make it into the language at some point.
Yeah. And
generics. I mean,
yes. I've spoken to people in the internals and in the PHPC channels, and generally speaking, found it very, very welcoming and open to discussion. And, you know, most people will have a good reason for saying, no, that's a stupid idea. Because sometimes it's because it's a stupid idea.
Yeah. And sometimes it's because we haven't heard this idea at least 10 times in the last 20 years.
Yeah. And there's a good reason that it hasn't happened yet. Usually.
Although I say that, opinions do change over time. Like having actual typing in PHP, that's been a slow and hard process to get done. And for a long, long time, there were people around that really weren't keen on this isn't something that PHP should do. PHP should just be a web language where everything is a string, sort of kind of attitude. I'm glad we're not there anymore.
You and me both. I remember those days well enough. And the number of gotchas I found with that. This is a string, but it's not the string you think it is anymore.
Yeah, it's that, and it's like using null as strings. I mean, that's creates deprecation notices now in later PHP 8 point whatever 2.3 versions, but yeah, it is improving. There's some way to go. There's features that we'd like to have in the language but are not always so easy to do, like generics. It's like it's not something we don't want, but we want an implementation that fits the language and doesn't hurt performance too much, and at the moment we haven't come up with a good solution there.
Yeah, and it's one that has had, I think we're up to 7 different major attempts at
probably
coming up with a plan.
Yeah, and many of them.
Eventually, we're going to come across the right one, and I can't think...
And that should be okay, too.
Yeah. I can't think who it is, but I know one of the internals team has spent a lot of time looking at generics and how we can get there and what options we have. And
several... Gina has had a look at generics for interfaces, but Adano has had a long, long look somewhere last year into the feasibility of it. It isn't something that we ignore, but it's also not the only thing we can look at because the language does need other features as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
And needs maintenance. And lately, with the deluge of security reports that we get, that's taking up a lot of time.
Yeah, and that's where the team needs the support of the community to make this happen.
Yeah. I mean, this is the annoying thing with security things, right? Security reports, like, we could use some more people, and more people have been starting to help out, but it isn't something you can just open up to everyone, which is, I mean, it's a good reason for it, but it's also kind of annoying.
Yeah, and finding the right people for that, and finding the people that, I don't mean this quite as negatively as it sounds, but trustworthy enough to not go
about it
in the wrong place.
It's a similar reason that we just don't give access to the infrastructure project for people to just start maintaining servers.
It's the right thing to do to, in a certain extent, gatekeep some of that, because you have to be sure that the people you're bringing in on those sort of areas are trustworthy. And you can look at that from two points of view. It can either be inexperience that makes them untrustworthy in that scenario, or it could be bad actor, or it could just be somebody that got it wrong.
That happens with all of us.
Yeah, of course.
Getting a wrong one is not something I'm not too worried about. I mean, as long as it's not destructive, then
it
should be fine, right?
Yeah, getting it wrong is fine. And that's where the rest of the team then comes in to make sure that things are put in place for review. And like for example, if I've mentioned it myself on this podcast, I've got a PR out there that's waiting for review that I know the people will get to it at the right time. And it's one of those where could I stamp my feet and scream about the fact that it's been like a month since I put it in?
This is not a nice thing. We are aware this is one of the weak points in the project now, where we let contribution linger for too long. But that's mostly because, as you know, there's loads of them.
Yeah. And that's an area that hopefully I can help with a bit. Yeah. If
other people are around.
Yeah. And so,
like I said at the beginning here somewhere, that the triaging is a lot of work, and help with that is, do you need to know some internals? No. Is it helpful? Sure, absolutely. But just trying out whether, just reading the reports to see whether it actually makes sense, it takes a lot of time, and lots of people can look at that. It's not something you don't need to know the internals so deep for that. But as I said, it does help sometimes.
Yeah. And even if you don't know the internals to the extent that you could go, oh, yeah, you'll find that bit in this file over here, it happens to be, being able to find your way around it and understand it can be helpful. But even the first step of triage of does this issue make sense? Is it still valid? So long as there's somebody that understands the concept of PHP, that can be enough to start with that aspect.
Yep, exactly.
So Joe's saying that you told him there was no shenanigans when he was given access to the infra.
Those might be my extra words.
Yeah. The interesting question I have now is, why did you let Joe on the infra?
Yeah, I'm not so sure.
No.
He seems nice.
He is nice, and he does know what he's doing, but you let him on the infra.
Yeah. I mean, it can't be just one person, right? Because if it's 1%, you can't go on holiday. And I like going on holiday, and I'm sure Joe likes going on holiday too.
Yeah. And bus factor of 1 is not a good bus factor.
No. A factor of 2 is also not great, so we need to go work on that. But we need to find somebody else who's nice.
I'm struggling.
That's okay. That's fine. We ran out of time anyway, so.
We have. We're actually at 9:05 somehow. I was trying to think of nice people that know infra, and I know lots of people that know infra, and I know lots of people that are nice, and the two of them don't go together.
Yeah, but that's okay. We'll keep working on it.
Yeah, we'll find people. Well, I guess that brings us to a good point to bring this to a close. So we'll start with saying, Derek, thank you very much for joining us.
You're welcome.
We got there in the end. It's been a few months. We've said we'll get this booked, and then never did.
A few months, I think. I think we might be years by now, but
yeah, we probably are about a year, because the first one was just after the last tech.
Yeah, there you go.
not the one, you know, in May this year, the one in May last year. So we may well be heading up to a year since we first mentioned it.
Yeah, that's all right. Happy to
thank you to everybody listening, and we'll see you in probably a fortnight's time.
All right.
Bye. Bye.